Hello, I am Randy Andrews, and today I'll be discussing Explorers from 1985. I'll give us some background on the cast, the background on the film, and some technical aspects, as well as the soundtrack by Jerry Goldsmith. We'll be flying through the skies into another world, and Soundtrack Alley begins. I can recall seeing this as a young person and the thrill of the sci-fi aspects of the film and the great aspects of the cast that really made me love this great treasure. So let's talk about some of the cast.
Oh, but don't you wonder what's out there? I mean, up in the universe, on other planets?
You believe everything you see in the movies?
Not everything.
There's nobody out there.
Here it is. Oh, great.
First of all, River Phoenix, who had grown up in the communes in South America, was somewhat unfamiliar with popular culture and slang words. During rehearsal, it became a running joke when he would attempt scripted, well-known words and phrases and usually pronounce them incorrectly. This was the feature film debut for both Ethan Hawke and River Phoenix. Robert Picardo, who played the Doctor on Star Trek Voyager, says that the alien makeup is the most uncomfortable he's ever worn. The Wok makeup was like having a typewriter balanced on his head, and the father was like balancing a TV. Whilst the crew were enjoying lunch, he would have to sit there and take the pain, which drew him to tears and actually caused open lesions on his head. River Phoenix would usually remove his glasses in between takes because he felt embarrassed in front of the girls in the cast. Now, although Robert Picardo received the actor credit for the father alien, his voice was actually provided by Frank Welker. Now, another thing about River Phoenix was that he originally auditioned for the role of Darren Woods. And something you might not have known is Robert Picardo had two roles. He was Wok the Alien and Starkiller, the space hero of the drive-in theater science fiction film. Now, Sherry Curry was considered for a part, but according to her autobiography, she was in the throes of drug dependency and couldn't even make it to a meeting. Dick Miller was in this movie and Gremlins, which this movie references through the newspaper his co-pilot picks up after spotting the UFO, which reads, Kingston Falls Riot Still Unexplained, which is the town in which Gremlins takes place. So this could be a connection. Ethan Hawke and Danny Nucci would later co-star in Alive. This is also the film debut of Danny Nucci. Robert F. Boyle, it's his second and even last acting role in a film. Now, the screenwriter was named Eric Luke, and he played Darren's teacher. Now let's look at some of the background on the film.
They were doing these big casting calls for Explorers. Joe Dante had just had a tremendous success with Gremlins, and they were letting him kind of make this. It was a really big movie for the time, and I went in on this casting call, and I went on series auditions over and over again, and I finally got the part. And I think my parents freaked out when I got the part. They never thought that was a realistic option of. Because it had all these problems, which is I had to go to L.A. to shoot the movie, and, you know, my mom didn't want to let me do the movie. Hmm. But my stepfather thought that was incredibly unfair to let me audition, but then not let me get it.
Because it was in the way of other things?
She had a
job. Because
she
just didn't like, yeah.
What, how were we supposed to take care of me?
Yeah.
You know, it was a very, and that's when you get into the whole culture of child acting, which is insidious and kind of dark and dangerous, which is, you know, children making money because the parents end up quitting their job and living off their kids. It's a very dangerous thing for a child's psyche. But so that was my experience. After it was over, my parents were like, no more until, you know, that was it. So I had this experience, and funnily enough, it became, I think, a really defining experience for me, Explorers, because of it was a massive failure. At the time, it came out, it was supposed to be this big hit, they spent a lot of money on it, and it really, I don't think it got one good review, and nobody went to see it. And
it has a cult. But it does.
It does now.
Yeah.
Now there's certain people
even
that like
then,
it.
There were a few people, but it was, yeah.
Well,
Joe has a cult, so.
To me, in the inside of it, it felt like I had let everyone down.
Mm.
It was this powerful, disappointing experience because I had been all hyped up and hepped up to believe that it was going to be the next E.T. and, you know, it was going to have a, you know, I don't know what I thought. But I thought it was going to be important. And it was, you know, dismissed. And there could have been no better profession for, I mean, no better teaching for a young person for a life in the arts than that. I mean, I kind of feel like if I survived that, I had a good, it gave me the tools I needed to ultimately survive Dead Poets Society, you know.
So was the work you did in that, did it feel like work? Did it feel like you had a method or a particular skill,
no,
or were you just playing at that point?
Children love to play. You know, now that I'm in my 40s, I have to work hard to cultivate. It's much more difficult now because you have to cultivate a sense of play. You have to pretend you're not inhibited. You have to pretend you don't realize that some people think you're a moron. You know, when you're younger, you just think everybody, oh, they're going to love this. Mm. Look at me in this shirt. Or not, you know, I mean, I felt the same way about writing when I was young. I was like, look at this. I wrote this. Isn't it great? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a kind of guilelessness or an earnestness that can be very irritating to other people. But when you're young, it's a kind of wonderful quality to have, really, because it gives you confidence in it. But so Explorers was kind of devastating. Mm-hmm. But when I graduated high school, I went to college, but they were doing another giant sweeping casting call, and I ended up...
So were you just a kid in high school who did Explorers, and that was part of your...
I was a kid in high school who very mysteriously seemed... Some of the girls in school were interested in me because they heard rumors that I might have known River Phoenix. Mm-hmm. That was my... And in fact, the movie became more embarrassing than anything else. Like, I'd done this movie, but... You know, the boys in the football team made fun of me about it. Like, cause it was obviously, to them, a bad film. I say all this fully wanting to also say that I had an amazing experience with Joe Dante, and I personally love the movie, and I think it's a cool movie. I still do. But at that period of time, 14 to 18, it was a punch in the nose right out of the gate.
And then you also, at that period, without working, without doing anything else, right?
I had a long time to think about it.
Yeah.
4 years when you're 14 is a long time.
A long time.
Yeah.
So then you went back to do this massive call
for Dead Poets Society.
The film was never finished and was released as a work in progress when the studio decided to move up the release date and release the film as it was, telling director Joe Dante that he was finished and they were going to go ahead and release it with what he had at that point. As the boys look through the junkyard for the pieces of their ship, Rosebud, the sled from Citizen Kane, can be seen sitting at the top of the pile. The actual computer that was used to make the screen display for Wolfgang's computer was not an Apple LLC. It was a SGI Iris 1400 workstation that cost $35,000. It contained a 73-megabyte hard drive, 1.5 megabytes of memory, and weighed 130 pounds, and required a custom portable wood crate to house it on set. The movie needed a program written in C language that could redraw a 3D wireframe scene in real time, a feat that was not possible before SGI produced this specialized hardware. The movement of the energy sphere on screen was controlled by a mouse and happened in real time for each scene and take, in response to the director's instructions. The workstation was modified to synchronize with the modern picture camera to eliminate flicker by tapping into one of the circuit boards, and the workstation had no Windows operating system. All programs were controlled by Unix commands. This is the first film that the American Motion Picture Visual Effects Company, Industrial Light and Magic, actually co-produced with a major studio. Originally, the film was going to be directed by Wolfgang Petersen, who wanted to film it in Germany. The studio balked at this decision, and Petersen would instead go on to direct the 1985 science fiction film Enemy Not Mine, which was filmed in Germany and released by 20th Century Fox later that year. According to director Joe Dante, the original rough cut of the movie that he and the editors put together were around 3 hours and 15 minutes long. That's a long movie for this. The sound effects from the movie at the drive-in were taken directly from the original 1982 Atari 2600 video game Yar's Revenge. Two of the deleted scenes on the DVD were part of the original theatric release, accounting for its longer playing time, 109 minutes compared to 106 minutes and 25 seconds for the DVD feature. The boys attend Charles M. Jones Junior High School. The school is named after the animator Chuck Jones. At one point, the boys are watching at the drive-in movie featuring the spacefaring hero named Starkiller. Now, this has a relation because George Lucas originally intended the lead character of his movie, Star Wars: A New Hope, to be called Luke Starkiller until he changed it to Skywalker at the last minute. Inside Wolfgang's basement, the toy monkey from the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind can be seen. The view of the city lights is a model which includes a suburb that looks suspiciously like a circuit diagram, complete with logic gates and an integrated circuit. Also, there's numerous references to Looney Tunes cartoons throughout the movie. When the boys create the sphere in Wolfgang's basement and it goes crashing out a window, the imprint in the glass looks suspiciously like Bugs Bunny's head. Also, Walk's first words to Ben and Darren are, "What's up, Doc?" This is, well, one of the movies that Ben watches is This Island Earth. In this movie and this one, the character builds a device that, with help from an alien, so that they may meet. This film also includes several segments from The War of the Worlds. One of the comic books seen on Ben's desk is an issue of the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. Now, Wolfgang's talking rat is named Heinlein, after the science fiction author Robert A. Heinlein, who wrote many stories about young boys experimenting with spaceflight. When Robert Picardo was in full makeup and costume as Walk, his mouth was only part of him, not completely covered, though his mouth was made to blend in with Walk's face. During the child's flight over the circuit board at the end of the film, some of the camera angles and moves are meant to mimic the flight to Neverland from Disney's Peter Pan. Walk can even be heard uttering a line of dialogue from the Maltese Falcon in response to Darren's question about the crystal gift given to the at the end of the film. The line is, "The stuff that dreams are made of." The Starkiller science fiction film was made up for this film, parodies a low-budget Italian-made Star Wars ripoff in which the actors' voices are dubbed. There's a Wilhelm scream that's actually heard in the movie. It's heard during an explosion and the drive-in movie Starkiller. Both Wolfgang and Ben have extensive sci-fi literature in their houses. There are the titles of the books that can be recognized: The Stars, My Destination by Alfred Bester, Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke, The End of Eternity by Isaac Asimov, Star Mother by Sidney J. Van Sycyok, 5, Midsummer Century by James Blish, The Twilight of Briars by Richard Cowper, Stargate by Andre Norton, Mind Bridge by Joe Haldeman, The Overlords of War by Gerald Klein, and Doc Savage by Kenneth Robeson. This is seen on Wolfgang's nightstand. The ranting and raving of Wach and Neek's dad is peppered with just barely recognizable bits of English, including, "You have no respect for authority," and "Wolfgang, who is Wolfgang?" The computer Wolfgang uses to control the bubble and eventually the completed spacecraft is an Apple LLC, as we've talked about before, and it was in 1984, and it sported a blazingly fast 1.4 megahertz processor and 128 kilobytes of RAM. The look and voice of Starkiller were modeled after Elvis Presley. And there's a poster from Space Camp that can be seen in Wolfgang's basement. And the plot is actually slightly revisited in Star Trek The Next Generation when a character who is named Dwight Schultz, that's the actor, is telepathically instructed how to modify the ship to enable it to visit the aliens. So let's talk about the score for a bit. This delightful and enchanting film, which is Explorers, was directed by Joe Dante, and it was his first film after he gained considerable attention with Gremlins. And it sees these three boys building a spacecraft and meeting aliens. It's part of that great raft of child's adventure films from the 1980s, and it's obviously not as well known as E.T. or The Goonies, but it's warmly remembered by many people of a certain age, which happens to be, well, my age as well. Dante's best films contain a certain subversiveness that he's always been very competent when playing it straight, and with his career, it seems to have fizzled out somewhat. But most of the successful relationship between the director and Jerry Goldsmith really highlight a lot of the influential themes of the movie. The construction is seriously an excellent piece of composing that Goldsmith uses, and one of his most memorable pieces that's found in the film. Bouncing pianos introduce the piece, and soon joined by swirling strings, and then the full orchestra for a rousing, stirring anthem in which it deserves a place on any list of great pieces of film music. It also opened up the original soundtrack album, and despite the middle of the section of the film, which made perfect sense, it was a bit like an overture, featuring the building blocks that the composer used for much of the rest of the score. Jerry Goldsmith was a master at doing this, taking fragments from here and there, turning them into something else, linking everything together, and making it weave like a giant tapestry. With Jerry Goldsmith, there are synthetic elements to the score. These are used to add this urethral sound to various passages, particularly some of the dream sequences that occur. And there's very unusual synth rock and roll music for the aliens themselves, and even it's done with such enthusiasm and warmth that it's nowhere near as objectionable as what some may think. Now, this is clearly noted in the piece Sticks and Stones. There's also occasional action music, nothing that's super heavy, but the original album focused on the rousing sections of the score at the expense of the melancholy aspects. And well, with the new version that had come out by La La Land Records, it's hard to muster and think about an enthusiastic feel for some of the heavily electronic sections. But Jerry Goldsmith does this beautifully, and he takes it, and we're so rewarded by getting this amazing full orchestra and having these different elements of the score. And so I'd have to say this is one of the most terrific scores by Jerry Goldsmith, and it's a must-have for any fan. So today I'll be playing a few cues from the film. First, I'll play main title, which was unused, Sticks and Stones, The Bubble, and Sci-Fi Flick and Rooftop. I hope you enjoy the space age music that Goldsmith brings to the table.
Thank you.
Next, I'll be playing Free Ride, Construction, First Flight, and Fast Getaway. These illustrate the brass and wonderful woodwinds throughout the score, rocketing our heroes to the stars. Jerry Goldsmith really shines through this underrated score. I hope you enjoy these.
Thank you.
Sadly, we've come down to another end of Soundtrack Alley. I hope you've enjoyed this show. And lastly, today I'll be playing Alien Love Call, Space Pirates, GIF's Flight Home, Have a Nice Trip, and Space Movie. I really enjoyed this movie as a young person and grew up loving the music that Jerry Goldsmith created for the film. I'd like to thank Alexander Schiebel for composing Soundtrack Alley's theme music. Find him at xanderscores.com. Find me on soundtrackalley.net, Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, and where you can find your podcatcher. You can email me at soundtrackalley@yahoo.com, and all these links will be in the show notes. So until next time, happy listening. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley, the podcast. I hope you take the time to review my podcast on iTunes or even listen to it on Podbean. With your review, it helps me get noticed on iTunes. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Thank you for listening to Soundtrack Alley Spotlight. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review the show. Also, if you want to leave a comment, question, or concern, please email me at soundtrackalley@gmail.com and enjoy looking at my blog at soundtrackalley.com.